Alcohol use. When is it too much? From eggnog to champagne, holiday cheer often goes hand in hand with holiday drinking. But how do you know if you are imbibing in an unhealthy way? According to the CDC, one in five Maine adults could be categorized as a binge drinker. And other reports show binge drinking is on the rise among seniors. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will talk with doctors and public health experts about the latest research on alcohol use in Maine and its effects on health. We'll learn about a new effort to help primary care physicians talk to their patients about alcohol use, and we'll hear from people in long-term recovery. Getting help for drinking too much, next on Maine Calling. But first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. The severity of the opioid crisis has dominated the news in recent years, but that doesn't mean the problems associated with alcohol use have ever gone away. Today, we're going to discuss alcohol use disorder in Maine, including binge drinking on the rise. This show is part of Maine Calling's ongoing focus on substance use issues in Maine. My guest in the studio, Dr. Harold Amsel. He is a specialist in addiction psychiatry with Penn Bay Medical Center. Dr. Nirav Shah is director of the Maine Center for Disease Control. And Bob H. dealt with alcohol use disorder for decades and has been sober for more than 20 years. He helps others in recovery. As always, we want to hear from you. Do you or someone you know struggle with alcohol use? Do you know of places in Maine that offer support? Are you wondering if you might have a problem? Share your comments and questions. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet @MaineCalling, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Dr. Shah, over the years, from time to time, there are newspaper articles about alcohol use in Maine, and Maine is always ranked among the heaviest drinkers in the U.S. New Hampshire and Vermont are often up there as well. What do we know today about alcohol use in Maine?
Well, Jennifer, as you noted at the top, as we as a state continue to confront and grapple with the opioid crisis, it's really critical that we not lose sight of other traditional substance use disorders like those associated with alcohol use. Roughly speaking, of around the 20 million Americans who have identified as having some sort of substance use disorder, 3/4 of those involve alcohol misuse. One of the things that we are typically or especially concerned about, not just generally, but specifically around alcohol use, is the high number of younger individuals who have reported binge drinking. In Maine, among young people who have reported alcohol use, about a third of that intake has come in the form of binge drinking. This carries significant health risks above and beyond regular alcohol consumption. One of the things that is also concerning to us as we go into the holidays is the notion that it might be okay to indulge more in the holiday season. What we really urge everyone to think about is the context in which they're drinking, and think about the fact that the risk of binge drinking doesn't take a break in the holiday season. So we really want to urge everyone to moderate their alcohol consumption, especially as we go into this festive season. The other thing we're really concerned about is the fact that binge drinking, apart from alcohol use, isn't perceived to be harmful in a way that it really is. Here in Maine in particular, fewer than a third of young people thought that binge drinking a few times a week is actually risky. Think about that. Even though it is an extremely risky behavior, fewer than a third of young people actually perceive it as harmful.
Define binge drinking.
When we talk about binge drinking, what we're really talking about is consuming 5 or more drinks in a row in one setting. As I noted a moment ago, it has health risks above and beyond those that are associated with drinking the same amount of alcohol over a longer period of time. Those health risks are even more pronounced in younger people, partly because their livers can't clear out the alcohol as quickly, so it backs up in the body. And also, young people's brains haven't fully developed, And the impact of such a significant amount of alcohol on a developing brain is really harmful.
And when you say five drinks is in one setting, five drinks in an hour, five drinks in 2 hours, five drinks in the stretch of one evening?
You know, it really varies depending on the individual. In some respects, it's one of those you know it when you see it. It's certainly not five drinks over the course of the day. And if you're at the point when you're wondering whether five drinks over the course of an hour constitutes binge drinking, it's probably time to start seeking assistance.
Okay, Dr. Amsel, I want to talk to you about just the way we think about alcohol use and alcohol abuse, because that's changing, isn't it? It's changing into where we're thinking about a spectrum. I remember a time not that long ago where people would think, well, you know, I drink a lot, but I'm not an alcoholic. There was one side of a wall and another side of a wall. That's not how your profession thinks about alcohol use anymore, is it?
Well, to some degree, we still think of it that way. There are people who have more vulnerability to getting into trouble with alcohol, and some people who have less vulnerability. On the side of more vulnerability, people with genetic predisposition to drinking and an environment that lends itself to other risk factors for drinking, like poverty or discord in the home, someone with all those elements would be very likely to go all the way to alcohol use disorder, which is a severe disorder in which alcohol takes over the life and takes over the personality. On the other side of the spectrum would be people who can do normal drinking, and 80% of the population can do normal drinking. They'll have a few drinks. They can stop after a few drinks. They'll use good judgment when they drink. They won't drink and drive. They will eat along with their drinking. They're not obsessed with needing a drink. They don't crave drinking in between parties. These are what we call regular, normal drinkers. And like I say, 80% of the population falls into that category. In between are people who, say, start binge drinking, which is what we're talking about today. And this would be people who are younger people who drink, Dr. Shaw had said, five drinks in 2 hours for a man, four drinks in 2 hours for a woman. These people are already in trouble with alcohol.
So maybe people who don't, like you use the word obsessed and crave, maybe people who don't crave alcohol, but once they start drinking, they have a hard time stopping.
Right. That's one of the criteria, too, for people who have alcohol use disorder. The way we think about alcoholism now is, do people have what's called alcohol use disorder? And people who have alcohol use disorder have various characteristics. They drink larger amounts over a longer period of time than they intended to. They try to stop drinking and are unable to. They spend a lot of their activities and time with drinking. They continue drinking even though it results in negative consequences for themselves or their families. They get into hazardous situations with drinking. They cause physical harm to themselves for drinking. And then there is what we call dependence, which is really when you're far gone. Dependence is characterized by two things: tolerance, meaning you need to drink more to get the same effect, and also withdrawal, that if you don't drink, you have certain physical reactions to the drinking.
Mm-hmm. So it seems to me that sort of, 10, 20 years ago, we were thinking about dependence, and people would think, well, I'm not there, so I must be okay. And what you're saying is, Not necessarily. If you find yourself meeting any of these criteria you've just outlined, you know, it's time to stop and think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, not being okay is different for different people. For someone who's genetically loaded to become an alcoholic, say grandma's on both sides, granddad's on both sides, all the uncles and aunts, someone who's genetically loaded, their first drink is very likely to take them down that road. So for them, their first drink is like someone who has a peanut allergy, their first peanut. Mm. This is going in a direction that's unstoppable. And for those people, I would say even one drink is too much.
Mm.
There are other people who will go through a phase of binge drinking, say, when they're in college, and grow out of it. Now the time at which people stop binge drinking is getting later and later. That's why we have more binge drinking. And also more women are binge drinking. And binge drinking is getting more severe. In other words, more extreme binge drinking. And binge drinking is being combined with other drugs. But binge drinking does not necessarily go all the way to alcohol use disorder.
All right. I want to bring you into the conversation, Bob. I introduced you by saying that you've been sober for more than 20 years. How did you do it? How did you recognize that alcohol was not doing for you what it needed to be doing for you? It was damaging your life. And how did you become sober?
Yeah. Well, thank you, Jennifer, for having me here today. I appreciate that. I'm Bob. I'm an alcoholic. And yeah, I haven't had a drink in over 20 years. And I drank for 25 years. So, it's a progressive disease. The way I look at it, when I pick up a drink, I can't put it down. And, you know, it didn't always start out that way. It progressed to that. And so, you know, I got into a lot of trouble at the end. The last 5 or 10 years of my drinking, I kept losing and losing and losing. And people were making decisions for me, and I'm grateful for that today.
When you say kept losing and losing and losing, what do you mean by that?
I was married and then had a child. And then lost that marriage and was unable to see my child, you know. Drinking was more important, and that's sad, you know. And, and I'd lose jobs. And then I lost me, you know, and I couldn't stop drinking. I had to have that drink every day. I'd be shaking. I'd be dry heaving. I'd be sick every day. And what solved that for me was a drink. And so I'd drink in the morning, and then I'd have a drink at lunchtime, and couldn't wait to get out of work to go drinking, and I'd close the bar room and, you know, do it over and over and over. And, you know, and that was just repeat every day for a long time. And, you know, and I would drive that vehicle, and that's a 4,000-pound weapon, you know, and I'd get caught, but that wouldn't stop me.
How'd you stop?
A judge helped me, and a probation officer, and a place in Portland called Serenity House. And a 12-step program. You know, today I have a good 12-step program, and I try to help others. And I go to the jails and prisons to try to help people in the jails and prison, you know, just to tell them my story, you know, not to get them sober, tell them my story and tell them how I ended up, you know, where I'm at today. And that's helped me to stay sober.
I'm going to ask you this question before I ask the doctors this question. If someone is listening to this program today and thinking, I wonder if I have a problem, what is your advice to them that the answer would be yes? How do you know if you have a problem?
Well, try to stop drinking. Put the drink down. Try to stop drinking for 90 days. Right? It seems like a long time. But try not to pick up a drink for 90 days and see how you feel. That was one of the biggest things that helped me, was to stay away from that drink for 90 days. And they told me that if I stopped drinking for 90 days, I'd have some money in my pocket. And that was enough to, I bought into that. I had no money, you know. All my money went to drinking. And so when they said, try not drinking for 90 days and go and talk to someone, you know. And, you know, meaning someone who's in recovery in a 12-step program of drinking, you know. And try that and see how you feel at the end of 90 days. And that was a big help. You know, my honest opinion, I felt great after 90 days, you know. And so I did 91 days. And I did one day at a time. And here it is, you know, March will be 21 years, you know, and I can't believe it.
Congratulations.
Joining
us on the line now, Dr. Mark Publicker, an addiction medicine specialist. Thanks for calling in, Dr. Publicker. Dr. Publicker, are you there?
Now you got me.
Aha, there we go.
Yes, mistake of being on mute. Other people.
Thank you so much for calling in. And I'm wondering, we've already talked about binge drinking a little bit and how it's we're seeing these trends of more young people. I've also read that we're seeing a trend of more seniors binge drinking. What do we know about that and why?
I think the population that we're seeing with the greatest increase in binge drinking are the people over 64. In my practice, I'm seeing increasing numbers of people coming in to see me who are in the 60s and 70s, who have developed loss of control and some cases in dependence. Interestingly, most of these new patients are women who are going through changes in their life state. Sometimes it's marriage, sometimes it's empty nest syndrome. But I'm definitely seeing an increase in older people, particularly women, who are engaging in binge drinking.
What do you feel needs to be done to better deal with alcohol use disorder?
I think it's already been said, alcohol dependence has been orphaned to some extent in treatment by our focus on opiate dependence. Of course, opiate dependence appropriately needs to have a tremendous focus, but with its focus, treatment for alcohol has really, really been weakened in the state. It's very hard to know where to refer people who have alcohol dependence. It's not true that a drug is a drug. It's a drug. There are specific issues related to opiates, and there are specific issues related to alcohol dependence that require some differential approach to treatment. The other major issue is recognition of the comfort of medical professionals to be able to deal with their own attitudes towards people with alcohol dependence and have the necessary skills and knowledge to be effective in intervening with their patients in a caring and compassionate manner. And that caring and compassionate manner is central to effective intervention and help for our patients. One of the things that we're doing in the Lunder-Dineen Time to Ask program, importantly, is helping medical professionals learn how to be comfortable in asking their patients about their concerns about their drinking, but doing so in a respectful, non-confrontational manner.
I can imagine that sometimes it's a very hard conversation and people feel ashamed and they feel they don't want to admit that they're not in control of something.
I just use the analogy. When I go to see my internist, I'm always concerned about my weight. And I'm concerned, and is my physician going to discuss it? And, of course, I need to have him discuss it with me. So the physician needs to have a level of comfort and be respectful to make it possible for me to recognize the problem and deal with it. Patients clearly have fear of and shame of having a problem. The core way of dealing with that is for the physician, the medical assistant, the nurse practitioner to be kind and clearly demonstrate acceptance. And it makes it much easier for people to overcome their stigma and shame.
All right. Well, thanks so much for calling in. That's Dr. Mark Publicker, a psychiatrist who specializes in addiction medicine. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions. What are your questions about alcohol use and abuse? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainpublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Maine Farmland Trust. Growing a thriving future for farms, communities, and food systems, dig in at mainefarmlandtrust.org. And BCM Environmental and Land Law, announcing a merger with Thomas R. Hanna and Associates. More on their Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine practice at nhlandlaw.com.
The House votes on whether to impeach President Trump.
No one, not even the president, is above the law.
Will he be brought to trial for abusing his power and obstructing Congress?
To use the power of impeachment on this nonsense is an embarrassment to this country.
I'm Mary Louise Kelly. Join us for live special coverage of the House floor debate and the historic vote from NPR News.
Join us tomorrow morning at 9 on Maine Public Radio and Maine Public Television. Maine Public has two paid summer internships available this summer for college or technical school students interested in careers in the news, journalism, digital news, and/or technical broadcasting fields. Candidates for these Jim Dow internships should preferably be attending an institution based in Maine or have an existing connection to the state of Maine. For more information, visit mainepublic.org and click on About and then Careers, or contact the Human Resources Department at 207-330-4506. The application deadline is January 19th.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we're talking about alcohol use disorder and binge drinking. My guests are Dr. Nirav Shah, director of the Maine Center for Disease Control, Bob H., who is in long-term recovery for alcohol use and helps others in recovery, and Dr. Harold Amsel, a psychiatrist who specializes in addiction with Penn Bay Medical Center. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Maine Calling Facebook page. On the line with us now is Denise O'Connell. She is Senior Program Manager for Lunder-Dineen Health Education Alliance of Maine. Denise, thanks for calling in. And, you know, already Dr. Publicker mentioned the Time to Ask program. Tell us what it aims to accomplish in Maine.
Hi, Jennifer. Very grateful to be a part of this important conversation. So, yes, Dr. Publicker is an advisor to our program called Time to Ask, and that stands for Education That Transforms Conversations About Alcohol Use. And what we're doing is we are working with primary care practices to provide them with education and training, as well as some on-site support and access to experts to really help them shift their attitudes, but also provide them with the skills and training to be comfortable and confident in engaging in conversations with patients on a regular basis. We know, we heard this great data earlier from the team on the phone, but we also know that there are brief interventions that are effective in people reducing consumption even before they have a disorder. But unfortunately, most of us in healthcare have had very little training around substance use disorders and in particular alcohol. So we're not always comfortable, and we may be worried that perhaps we might be offending our patients and many other barriers. So this program really looks to the interprofessional team to give each one of them what they need to make a difference in someone's life by really just having a conversation. One other thing that we've discovered with this program through our pre-program needs assessment and our impact evaluation is that although most of us consume alcohol, most of us know very little about what the effect is on our body even before we have a disorder. We have lots of resources on our website that we'd love to point people towards, but those are some of the beginning conversations that a provider can have with us as we go to a primary care practice and just simply, let's just take a look at your drinking and how it may be connected to some of your other health problems.
That's great, Denise, and thank you so much. We will connect our Maine Calling Facebook page and the Maine Calling webpage to the Lunder-Dineen Time to Ask program information and resources. Thank you so much for calling in. That's Denise O'Connell, who is with Lunder-Dineen Health Education Alliance of Maine. Dr. Shaw, I want to turn to you. Denise O'Connell mentioned that many of us don't know what kind of harm binge drinking can cause. Somebody listening here says, I don't binge drink very often, but sometimes I do. What's wrong with that? What happens to your body if you drink more than five drinks?
There are a number of health effects on the body that result from binge drinking that are distinct from just having consumed the same amount of alcohol over a longer period of time. It really is that concentration. The first is that our livers can only clear out so much alcohol at one time. And when you binge drink, you typically take in more than what your liver can clear out. This can cause everything from chest pain, heart palpitations, nausea, headaches, all the way up to and including things like alcohol poisoning, which can result in death. On a longer, chronic basis, the health effects of alcohol use are well known. They include everything from heart disease, diabetes, and increased rates of stroke, as well as cancers. What really gives us pause when we take a look at the data is not only are these health effects really concerning, that they're not well known. The perception of harm from binge drinking is not something that's well appreciated, particularly among youth. Fewer than a third of young adults in Maine thought that binge drinking a few times a week was something that was risky. This is one of the lowest rates of perception of harm of any state in the country. So not only are the health effects there, one of the things we really need to make sure we're doing is communicating these dangers and these risks to our younger colleagues.
We'll go to Jennifer, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Jennifer. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. I have a question about alcohol-induced amnesia with binge drinking. I hear that it's more prevalent amongst women. I'll wake up and I don't really even have much of a hangover, but I'll be told about large segments of the night that I don't remember at all, and it's really creepy.
Thanks for your call, Jennifer. What we used to refer to as blacking out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and this is Dr. Amsel. One of the risks of binge drinking and of excessive drinking in general is having a blackout. Blackout is a period of time where you just don't remember what you did when you're under the influence of alcohol, and that can be very dangerous. One of the things that can make blackouts more common would be mixing any kind of medication with alcohol. For example, the combination of Ambien and alcohol can result in blackouts. Blackouts can be very dangerous. When I was practicing in New York, I did an evaluation, a forensic evaluation, for someone who loved his father, but during a blackout stabbed his father to death and had no memory of it whatsoever. So anything can happen during a blackout.
Jennifer, thank you for your call. A call that dropped says she has a friend who is just diagnosed with wet brain, where you lose consciousness when binging and get brain damage. It is not talked about sometimes alcohol abuse can cause brain damage and dementia, and it's important for young people to know. I see you out of the corner of my eyes nodding. Bob, you know people who have had this.
Absolutely. And the thing about drinking is that you keep drinking and the progression of it is that it gets worse. And so wet brain is like late stage alcoholism. You keep drinking and those blackouts keep, getting more persistent. People tell you that you have, you did this last night. You have no recollection of it. You don't even know how you got from the bar to your house driving home, and drove home in a blackout, which is crazily dangerous. And I did that over and over and over again. And the wet brain part is that, you see the drunk on the street, and he's a mess. And he's just drinking, and you'd think he'd do something about it, and he can't because the drink is what he thinks is holding him together, And he needs that drink in the morning because he's shaking and he's sick. And that was me, years ago. And I am so glad that I've been able to stay away from a drink for a long period of time now. And, You know, there is hope out there, by the way. If you suffer from this and you cannot stop drinking, you know, there is a phone number I'd like to give. And it's the hotline for getting help with your drinking. It's the AA hotline, and it's manned 24 hours a day, and it's 207-774-3034, and that's 207-774-3034. And like I said, it's manned 24 hours a day, and if you're needing help, I suggest that you give them a call. They'd be glad to talk to you, you know, and direct you in a possible in a positive way. So, yeah.
You say there is hope. Tell us about your life today.
Oh, man. Just this weekend, I was at my three-year-old's granddaughter's birthday. And I'd have missed that if I was still drinking. I'd be dead or I'd be in prison. You know, my daughter was 5 years old when I got sober. She's now 26, you know. And, you know, just the life, you know, I have good family, you know, and, you know, just recently my aunt passed away, and I was there with her all the time. You know, when I'm drinking, I'm not there. And so when I'm sober, I get to be with my family, you know, and I get to enjoy life. And by the way, I do not fight a drink today. I do not wake up thinking about it, how I'm going to get it, what am I going to do to steal or manipulate or scam to get a drink, because my drinking ran my life. And if you're an alcoholic like I'm an alcoholic, you get that. And my deal is don't pick up the first drink. And I let my doctors know that I'm an alcoholic in recovery so that they don't give me something that might trigger me too. And that's important to let my dentist and my doctors know who and what I am. And I'm honest about my disease, you know. And I have a disease that tells me I don't have a disease, that I can drink. And so I do recovery daily. You know, all I have is today, 24 hours. And, you know, and I have a really, really good life. I have my own business. People want me to do things for them, you know, in a positive way. I'm glad my life has turned the way it has. I get to go to the jails and prisons and help people. My phone rings all the time for people that want help. And I'm really, really proud of that, you know. And, you know, so, again, that phone number that I just read out, if you're struggling with the drink and you can't stop and you want to get some help, call that number. Again, it's 207-774-3034. Thank you.
And we'll also put that on our webpage. Nirav, I saw you nodding vigorously when Bob was talking about make sure your doctors know. What can a doctor, what kind of prescription could a doctor write that might be harmful to somebody who's in recovery?
Well, first of all, Bob, my hat goes off to you, sir. Congratulations on all the work that you've accomplished. It's really amazing. And it is important, as Bob noted, that individuals who are in recovery or grappling with recovery of any sort, whether it's alcohol use disorder, substance use disorder of any kind, let their physicians and any healthcare provider know. Physicians might inadvertently prescribe a medication like Valium, which for someone who's grappling with recovery could prompt a relapse. So there are a number of medications out there that for someone who is contending with things like substance use disorder could put them on the wrong side of where they want to be. It's all the more important to make sure that you're really candid with anyone and everyone in the healthcare system, maybe not just your physician, but as Bob mentioned, your pharmacist, your dentist, your physical therapist, your physician's assistant, anyone who might be in a position to authorize some kind of prescription.
Jen on Facebook writes, I hope you also discuss the rise in our culture of, quote, mommy drinking, which is also a rapidly rising problem. All you have to do is Google wine memes and you will see all kinds of messages condoning women and excessive drinking to deal with kids, jobs, husbands, etc. The sober curious movement is pushing back against these big alcohol messages, and there is a growing group of people who are taking a 30-day, 60-day, or 90-day break to see how their sleep, mood, weight, health, etc. can dramatically improve without alcohol. There are many online resources available. So thank you, Jen, for that. We're going to go to another quick break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. Again, talking about alcohol use, alcohol abuse, and binge drinking on Maine Calling. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You're listening to Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Breakwater, Curiosity for Life, offering exceptional day school and after school options for toddlers through 8th grade, breakwaterlearning.org. Evergreen Home Performance, offering energy-efficient windows and insulation to help homeowners achieve year-round comfort. More at evergreenyourhome.com. And Bull Moose, celebrating the tactile experience of reading and proponents of dog ears and bookmarks. Locations across Maine and at bullmoose.com.
Coming up on the next Commonwealth Club program, National Review editor Rich Lowry argues that nationalism is not a dirty word. Lowry says it is time to rekindle a healthy sense of American nationalism in our civic life. Join us for a conversation with a conservative thought leader about the good side of nationalism on the next Commonwealth Club radio program.
And that Commonwealth Club forum is coming up after Maine Calling. In this digital age, there's plenty of information everywhere, including events. But don't you sometimes wish you could find exactly what you want? This is how our community calendar works, especially if you're looking for something to do around the holiday season. You search for the date, location, venue, and/or the type of event you're looking for, and there it is. The community calendar has hundreds of concerts, exhibits, lectures, and then some from all around the state. And it's always open for new listings should you want to get the word out about your event. The community calendar, another public service from Maine Public. It's online at mainepublic.org.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, understanding how to deal with problems with alcohol use. My guests are Bob H. He has been sober for more than 20 years and helps others in recovery. Harold Amsel was with Penn Bay Medical Center and Nirav Shah with the Maine Center for Disease Control. If you'd like to join our conversation, the phone number 1-800-399-3566. Calling in now is Helen Torgelson. She is a Kennebunk resident and store owner who has been in recovery for more than 30 years. Helen, thanks for calling us.
Me.
Tell us about your struggle and what led to your recovery.
More than 30 years ago, I was pregnant, and I knew that my drinking was a problem. And so when I went to see the doctor in one of my early appointments, I talked to him about it. And coincidentally, he just kind of brushed me off and said, oh, don't worry about it. You'll be fine. And but I knew I wasn't fine, and I knew that I needed to do something. And I found a therapist who was able to direct me to AA and help me get sober. So that was how I started.
You know, so interesting. We've had an email about this, and we've also done a program about fetal alcohol syndrome. There are people out there concerned that, many people today are like your doctor was 30 years ago, brushing off the importance of not drinking when pregnant. What would you say to them?
Well, I would say that it's very important to be aware, to be able to work with patients that that need help, and that I think any kind of drinking when you're pregnant is harmful.
What advice would you give to someone who's listening today and thinks, I need help?
I would say if you're even considering it, to reach out the number that Bob gave for Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a wonderful community. It's an opportunity to make a change in your life. And even if you're just considering it, to just reach out. And the hand of AA will be there to take your hand and to help you get sober.
Well, Helen, thanks so much for giving us a call. That's Helen Torgelson. She has been in recovery for decades and lives in Kennebunk. And congratulations to you. Dr. Shah, what are questions people can ask themselves if they're trying to figure out whether they need help?
There are four questions that I'd ask everyone listening to ask themselves if they're wondering whether they need help with their alcohol use disorder. The first one is to ask yourself if you yourself have ever felt the need to cut down on your drinking. The second is to ask yourself whether anyone in your life has annoyed you by criticizing your own drinking. The third is to ask yourself if you've ever felt guilty about your own drinking. And the fourth one is to ask whether first thing in the morning you've ever needed an eye-opener, something to steady your nerves or to get rid of a hangover. Again, ask yourself if you've ever had to cut down, if anyone's ever been annoyed, if you've ever felt guilty, or whether you've ever needed an eye-opener. And if the answer to any of those is yes, it's time to start seeking help.
To any of those, not all four of those.
To any of those. And it's okay not to be okay, as Bob mentioned. But if you're not okay, it's time to start looking at the resources that are available to help you get help.
An email, an anonymous email here. My partner owns a business in the alcohol industry and has for a long time exhibited behaviors of alcohol use disorder. Given that their career and livelihood is so inherently linked to alcohol, I'd love some guidance on how to navigate getting them on a path to recovery. Knowing that the outcome is entirely out of my control, are there initial steps I can encourage? How can I be most supportive?
Well, that's an interesting question and one that we come across a lot. And it underscores the fact that it's not just the alcoholic who's suffering. The alcoholic suffers more than anyone, but the family suffers, the spouse suffers, the children suffer, the parents, the employer, the other employees, the person on the road who could get into a traffic accident. When someone close to you has an alcohol use disorder, the first thing to do is to be honest with yourself about it. It's very easy to make excuses for that person or to buy into their denial. So step one is to be honest with yourself that the person really does have a problem. The other part of it is to look at what is my role. People who develop severe alcoholism problems can really do it, rarely do it, without some sort of enabling or codependency around them, someone who's either making excuses for them or cleaning up for them or just not confronting them or being honest with them about it. If those two things are dealt with, the next step would be perhaps to ask the partner to go to their regular physician and maybe even talk to the physician beforehand to say, I think my partner has an alcohol use disorder. Do you think you can help them? Because the physician can then do the screening test like the one that Dr. Shaw just talked about, the CAGE, or various other screening tests. There are many screening tests that they can do. The partner can be hooked up with AA. Like Bob says, a call to AA, there'll be somebody on the other line who will be happy to help to set up a ride, to get somebody to take them to an AA meeting, that kind of thing. If the person had an incident or is in withdrawal, they can be taken to any emergency room where they'll be hooked up with services. The issue with the alcoholic that's really far gone is denial. Denial is a basic part of alcoholism that's not always easy to understand, but is imperative to understand if you're going to deal with the alcoholic. The alcoholic mind has been hijacked in a way that they can't see reality for what it is. Their reality is that they don't drink too much. Their reality is it's not hurting anybody else. Their reality is they can stop whenever they want. These are all aspects of denial that get in the way. Now, if someone is really far gone, they can enter an inpatient treatment program. They need time between their last drink and when their personality and their brain will come back to life enough to be able to recognize what's going on. And part of an inpatient treatment program, and sometimes done outpatient, is an intervention. When all else fails, there has to be what we call an intervention. And that usually involves bringing together an expert or a team of experts and the alcoholics' support network, their family, their friends, their employer.
Do you find there are people who say, I just don't want to stop?
That is what denial is, whether they say it overtly or whether they say it with their actions. People who are in their alcohol mode don't want to stop. It's as a matter of fact, as alcohol progresses, alcohol becomes more important in the person's brain than anything, than family, than food, than income. The brain is hijacked to the point where the person literally feels that without alcohol, life is nothing.
Mm. I want to get to, we're almost out of time. I want to go to Peter in Cherryfield. Hi, Peter. Go ahead.
Oh, hey. Thanks for taking my call. I mean, I happen to be 38 years sober, but I'm an educator, and I've spent those 38 years taking kids to AA meetings, Alateen meetings, Al-Anon meetings, and working with kids and adolescents. There is a critical need in the state of Maine for every school to have some kind of student assistance program that includes addressing drugs and alcohol. And, I mean, we know the statistics for adolescent binge drinking, you know, are scary. So a couple of years ago, I ran moderated a panel at the Maine Counseling Association trying to educate counselors on the importance of such a program. And we asked the audience of 60 counselors from all over Maine, how many of them had in their school some kind of program? Only about 6 or 8 hands went up. So that's a critical need that needs to be addressed by our state.
All right. Well, Peter, thanks for your call. Dr. Shaw.
I agree. First of all, my congratulations goes off to Peter as well for the efforts that he sustained. And one of the concerning statistics around teen use of alcohol is that about 90% of teen drinking is considered binge drinking because of the way it's undertaken, the speed, the quantity, the proliferation of drinking games. 90% of youth and teens in Maine who consume alcohol do so in the form of binge drinking.
Mm. Peter, thanks for your call. Going to try to get to a couple more. Go to Carol in Starks. Hi, Carol. If you could be quick, that would be great.
Yes, hi. Thank you. I think that we underestimate as parents, our educators, people who work with teens, how incredibly addictive alcohol is. And I think if we use the terminology alcohol and other drugs, rather than talking about our drug and alcohol policies as if alcohol is a lesser problem, we'd be well. It would help us to direct our efforts more effectively and help parents understand that a six-pack of beer is really not a great idea for a 16-year-old at a party. Thank you.
Thank you, Carol.
I'm Bob again, and it's really great to hear everyone, but what I've noticed in the recovery that I see around where I attend the meetings and stuff is there's a lot of young people showing up today more than ever, and that is awesome. The awareness that they have a problem at such a young age, you know, the elevator can get off at any floor, and it's just wonderful to see a 17, 18, 19-year-old person coming into the halls, you know, and trying to get help. And seeds get planted, by the way. You come into these halls and you hear that there's recovery, and that sticks with someone. And it's so nice to see the young people, and there's a lot of different groups that are strictly young people so that you feel like I belong here. And they really help each other out tremendously. So There is good recovery in Maine, throughout the state of Maine. Yes, you have to make a phone call to find it sometimes, but it's in just about every community that there is recovery. And wherever you travel, you can find these meetings. And, you know, so it's important to remember that I have this disease till the day I die, even if I'm not drinking. It's a thinking disease, and It tells me that I can pick up a drink and when I know I shouldn't.
Thank you, Carol, and thank you, Bob. I'm going to try to squeeze in one more call. Jocelyn in Augusta, hi. And if you could be kind of quick, that would be great.
Absolutely. Hi, how are you?
Great.
Yeah, I just wanted to say I love listening to the show, and I've been sober for 28 months. I was in a institution in TJ, Mexico for a year, but I am so grateful for my sobriety, and I find that the support that I had from, well, one member of my family who sent me to Mexico, and then just the support group that I had in NA and AA, because the reality is alcohol is a drug. It's a legal drug, but it is a drug.
Jocelyn, and, how did your family member talk to you? What did that person say that helped you feel supported and not judged?
She just knew that I was hopeless because my ex-husband and my ex-boyfriend were emailing her and saying that that I was in really bad shape. I wasn't taking care of my children or myself. And I had actually tried to commit suicide a couple times. And so she just came to me and she said, look, this is what I have for you. You're going to Mexico and we're leaving today and you're going on a flight in 2 days. So we have to get your passport. And I said, how long is it for? She said for a month. And I ended up being there for a year. It was a locked clinic. It was like a jail, but it was worth it for me, because I surrendered. I had been binge drinking and using other illicit drugs for 20 years, and I needed it. Since I've been out, everything has come to me so quickly. I'm so grateful. I have a job. I have a home now. My kids are so grateful. And it's just amazing how quickly everything comes back if you have, if you keep your support system and keep the right group of people around you and surrounding you every day.
Well, Jocelyn, I think you're a terrific final phone call for our hour here on Maine Calling. Thank you so much for calling in. And thank you to our guests. Dr. Harold Amsel specializes in addiction psychiatry with Penn Bay Medical Center. Dr. Nirav Shah directs the Maine Center for Disease Control, and Bob H. in long-term recovery, who works for a recovery program. John Keimel ran the board today. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. A quick note about tomorrow's show. Maine Public Radio will offer live coverage of the impeachment vote. We at Maine Calling will be live streaming a program on rural hospitals. We'll be live at 1 p.m. You can listen to the program from our website, mainecalling.org, or at our Facebook page. We would love for you to leave us a voicemail with questions about rural hospitals. That number, 370-3487. Again, 370-3487. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.